Okay, so hi, good morning, everyone. In retrospect, this is a bit of a tedious title, which someone pointed out to me, and I said, yeah, it's tedious. So I'd like to offer an alternative. Does neighborhood-level poverty affect sexual behaviors? A study of inner-city adolescents. Much more concise, better start. Okay, just before I get started, I would like to acknowledge and thank my co-authors, Rachel Hart, who's here, and Bruce Coles, who's back in Albany. Okay, so safely maneuvering through the teenage years can be particularly challenging for minority and low-income youth. Can you hear me? Do I need to be more? Among all youth, minorities have the highest rates of homicide, hospitalization for assaults, pregnancy, sexually transmitted infections, including gonorrhea, chlamydia, and HIV. Various studies have shown that low individual-level socioeconomic status affects behavioral and health outcomes among adolescents. And several other studies have shown an effect of neighborhood poverty on behavioral and health outcomes, including sexual activity and STIs. Okay, so our primary research question is, what is the effect of zip code-level SES on sexual behaviors of adolescents in a small urban setting? Albany is a small urban setting. But it can be challenging to disentangle the effect of ecologic-level and individual-level SES since they are related. So our second research question is whether effects that we see of zip code-level SES on sexual behaviors are completely explained by individual-level SES. I want to say this another way to frame this question, is the effect of zip code-level SES on sexual behaviors partially or completely confounded by individual-level SES, or is there actually something there? Okay, so we conducted the Albany Youth Health Survey in Albany, New York, which is the capital of New York State. Albany is a small urban city with relatively high rates of poverty and STIs, particularly in several of the downtown areas. The study participants were selected from a group of adolescents, ages 14 to 18, who are part of a summer youth employment program, which is run by the City of Albany Department of Youth and Workforce Services. The program is open to all youth residents of Albany, but tends to attract mostly low-income and middle-income teens. And our data were collected during a 6-week period in July and August of 2008. The data were cross-sectional, and participants completed the self-administered surveys using personal digital assistants, or PDAs, which have been shown to be particularly effective in collecting sensitive information. And I was a big fan. I don't know that I'd ever want to collect data without the use of a PDA again. We received approval from the University at Albany Institutional Review Board. The study required both assent from each participant and consent from a parent. We interviewed 432 participants. Two ended up being ineligible, two didn't complete the entire survey. The last question of the survey asked about participants' level of honesty in their overall responses, and there were seven who reported being less than mostly honest overall, which is actually pretty not, you know. So we excluded them. If they admitted that they were not honest, then we excluded them. And then seven participants reported ineligible zip codes. So our final sample size for the analysis was 414. So participants were asked about a number of, they were asked a number of questions, including those related to socio-demographic factors, socio-environmental factors, and behaviors. Behaviors included sexual activity, use of drugs and alcohol, participation in gang-related activities and other forms of community violence, experiences of domestic relationship and sexual violence, and then smoking, physical exercise, diet, and nutrition. And because this is the STD conference, we're going to focus on the sexual behaviors. All right, so zip code level poverty was defined as living in a, reporting that you lived in a zip code, which had an average annual household income less than the national average of $26,000. And that's based on the US Census Bureau's definition in the year 2000. Individual level poverty was defined as self-report of living in public housing or living in a household where someone received welfare, supplemental security income, which is also called SSI, or food stamps. We had two outcomes. History of sexual activity, which included vaginal, oral, and/or anal sex, and report of multiple heterosexual partners. Just to note that there were only a few reports of same-sex partners, and since the numbers were small, we decided just to focus on heterosexual partners. Okay, so for this analysis, I'm going to present the univariate results for the exposure, the two outcomes, our potential confounder, and several other sociodemographic covariates. For the bivariate analysis, we examined crude prevalence ratios and 95% confidence intervals between zip code level SES and our two outcomes. We also looked at prevalence ratios between individual level SES and then the exposure and the outcomes to check the Rothman and Greenland modern epidemiology criteria of confounding. And for my students in the audience, I know you know what that is. So although we were interested in confounding by individual level SES, we did first examine whether individual level SES is an effect modifier, since that would require us to present stratum-specific effects. However, individual level SES was not found to be an effect modifier, so we were able to calculate prevalence ratios and 95% confidence intervals that were adjusted for individual level SES. Okay, so in the multivariable analysis, we used log binomial regression to again obtain prevalence ratios and 95% confidence intervals. We wanted to stick with prevalence ratios because our outcomes were common, so we didn't want odds ratios. In addition to adjusting for individual level SES, in the model we also adjusted for sex and male-female, age and race. And just a comment, given the hierarchical structure of the data, and by that I mean that individuals are clustered within zip codes, we wanted to run a multi-level model, a multi-level log binomial model, but we were unable to because the number of zip codes were too small. So we're still working on whether there are some other ways to take into account the multi-level structure. Okay, so here are some results. 58% of the respondents were female. Almost three quarters were African American, one quarter were white, and 11% were Hispanic. Obviously, these race ethnicity categories are not mutually exclusive. In terms of the age distribution, we had roughly equal numbers of 14, 15, and 16-year-olds. There were fewer 17 and 18-year-olds. 59% of the participants were categorized as having low individual SES, and 47% lived in low-income zip codes. In terms of sexual behaviors, 43% reported having had sex, some kind of sex. The breakdown by type of sex was 36% for vaginal sex, 30% for oral sex, and 7% for anal sex. There were significant differences between males and females, which I've shown that there, with higher proportions among males, which is what we would expect. So 55% of the sexually active participants reported multiple partners. The range was 0 to 40, but the mean was 5 and the median was 3. So obviously there were some outliers there. Okay. So first, we're interested in the effect of zip code level SES on sexual activity, so ever having had sex. So this crude association is represented by the arrow at the bottom, which says that adolescents in the low-income zip codes were 1.5 times more likely to have had sex. Okay? Since we're thinking about confounding, I wanted to show, we call this our confounding triangle, and mention the criteria for confounding, which are that the confounder, which is individual level SES, should be associated with the exposure in our source population, which in this case is everyone, and it should also be associated with the outcome in the referent population. And our referent population are the people who do not have low zip code level SES. Okay? So we can see when you look at those numbers that those with low individual level SES were in fact 1.7 times more likely to live in low income zip codes. But among those participants in the higher income zip codes, those with low individual level SES were not more likely to have sex. You see that? That's the 0.92. So individual level SES, in fact, does not fit the criteria for confounding in these data. All right, let's look at number of partners. So adolescents in the low-income zip codes were 2.2 times more likely to report multiple partners. And among those not in the low-income zip codes, those with low-level SES, individual-level SES, were only 1.1 times more likely to report multiple partners. So again, individual-level SES doesn't fit those criteria for confounding. Okay, but even if we decide that individual-level SES should be included as a confounder based on confounding theory rather than what we see in our data, which is a reasonable way to go, when we ran the multivariable models, we saw that adjusting for individual-level SES, sex, age, and race, participants living in low-income zip codes were 1.4 times more likely to have had sex and 2.5 times more likely to have had multiple partners. So these prevalence ratios represent a 14% increase in effect size due to confounding for sexual activity and a 5% decrease for number of partners. Okay, so you're probably thinking, what is the bottom line? The bottom line is that in our study, low-income SES at both the individual level and the zip code level was associated with increased sexual behavior among adolescents in a small urban setting, and participants in the low-income zip codes were at an increased risk even after adjusting for individual-level SES. So it wasn't all explained away by confounding. So what about the implications? This study and others suggest that adolescents are shaped by their economic environments at multiple levels. And it suggests that neighborhood level or aggregate income acts through mechanisms that are different than those for individual level income. So some of these mechanisms have been suggested in previous literature, and I'll just mention a couple, like social cohesion, collective efficacy, family processes, peer influences, concentration of poverty, and neighborhood deterioration. We strongly believe that interventions that deal with both risky behaviors as well as socio-environmental context are critical, and these include things like structural interventions as well as youth development behavioral interventions that were mentioned in John Douglas's talk yesterday. He mentioned some of those. So here's my contact information if anybody wants to get more information. So thank you very much.